It's a pleasure to be with you. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. This is the program where we expose the misconceptions associated with religion and politics, military and economic schemes. Unlike other programs, instead of merely presenting the news, we're going to explore what the motivations are behind the things that are happening and what they ultimately portend for our future. Then during our second hour, we're going to engage God on His terms by way of His one and only covenant. We will seek to replace religion with reason. Our phone number, if you would like to question, criticize, or affirm anything that is said on this program, is 877-300-7645. Going to begin the day in Greece. Reuters is reporting that Greek workers walked off the job for the second time in as many weeks, aiming to show EU leaders that a new wave of wage and pension cuts will only worsen their plight after 5 years of recession. Yeah, I can't think of any better way to protest joblessness, and it's about 25% in Greece, by having those people fortunate enough to have a job walk off the job repeatedly. More than 20,000 protesters were gathering in central Athens as most businesses and private sector activity ground to a halt. Now, that's certainly the best way to fight recession. You just shut everything down and perk the economy right up. It is the second 24-hour strike called by the country's two biggest labor unions, the ADEDY and the GSEE. Streets emptied with police at every corner and 4,000 officers deployed to protect ministries and seal off access to the parliament because these protesters have a tendency to become violent. And yet they want us to listen to them. They say, enough is enough. They've dug our graves. They've shoved us in. And we are waiting for the priest to read the last words, said one of the protesters, a 50-year-old worker at a water utility whose wage has been halved to 900 euros and who has two unemployed sons. This austerity is making all of Europe's south rebel. The euro will be destroyed. We are asked to pay for what our politicians have embezzled. You know, that's the nature of people. Very, very few people are willing to take responsibility. It's the point that Mitt Romney was trying to make when he was surreptitiously recorded, talking about the 47% and they feel entitled. The situation is just worse in Greece. The unions have sought and received so many benefits that the economy can no longer bear them. And so in Greece, now that they actually dug their own graves, they did this to themselves. They lavished all sorts of benefits on themselves and were unwilling to pay for them, continuing to indebt their children and their children's children, that now rather than take responsibility for what they did to themselves, they're blaming others. They're saying they dug our graves. It's not true. The opposite is true. They shoved us in. No, you dug your own grave and borrowed the money to do it. You jumped in. It is sad that this is the attitude, but it's the attitude that's going to permeate most every country in Western Europe and ultimately in the United States as economic conditions worsen because no economy can sustain the kind of debt levels that are being wielded upon our children, bankrupting society after society. But the nature of people is to always blame somebody else. It's their fault, not my fault, for having done this. The thing that is also interesting here is that that Europe's South is in rebellion. There is going to be a two-tiered European Union, the North and the South. The Southern European tier is likely to be what is known as the Antichrist kingdom. He will be, in all likelihood, a Macedonian. He will probably have a Muslim father, a Orthodox Christian or Catholic mother. He will be a secular humanist. He will be educated in one of the best of either England's or America's liberal universities. And he will put together a cobbled together group of failing economies under the promise that he will be their savior and resolve their financial issues. And he will blame everyone other than those who perpetrated this upon themselves. And so it will be an alliance of southern European nations. I think not only will Macedonia be involved, but also Greece, Italy, and a number of nations that all connect through the what once was Czechoslovakia and Yugoslavia throughout that region. And we are seeing the cracks right now that are going to ultimately create the haves and have-nots of northern and southern Europe. There's another item in the news today. This one on the side of the world that we typically spend more time focusing upon. The head of Saudi Arabia's religious police. Now just think of that for a moment. And by the way, almost every Islamic country has it. It's dominant in Egypt, for example. A religious police has said that there's a pressing need to employ women in their force. Now, the problem, of course, they have of doing that is a woman in Saudi Arabia cannot leave her home, actually not her home, her husband's or her father's home, without a male escort who is a family member. So you can't hire a woman to do anything in Saudi Arabia unless her father or her husband trails along. And men in Saudi Arabia don't work. Saudi Arabian men don't work. No. They hire others to do all of the labor because of the ooze that flows out of their soil. So this is an impossible situation. But he's saying anyway, the religious police wants to hire women in the force. And speaking to the official Saudi Gazette newspaper, Abdul Aziz al-Sheikh said that he hoped a recruitment drive would take place soon. Now, how are you going to have a recruitment drive? Women can't leave their father's or their husband's home without their husband or their father's escorting them. So, yeah, it's just great. Yep, that's what we're going to do. So anyway, he says that this article says that Saudi's religious police enforce the kingdom's strict Islamic laws. Yeah, they are there to enforce Sharia, including dress and prayer times. There is no indication that the introduction of women into the religious police would necessarily make the rules less strict, but it would boost the presence of women in public life. There are no women in public life in Saudi Arabia. Now, reality here is mirrored in so many of the letters that I've received at Prophet of Doom. And it's mirrored in so much of the behavior we see in the Islamic world. Women who are the victims of Islam victimize their daughters. It is the cause and effect of this horrible religion. Women are more vicious in their support of the oppression of Islam and the sexism that creates hellish conditions for them, and that they are actually more aggressive at oppressing their own daughters and other women than men are. It's the most amazing thing to see how the victims of Islamic sexism perpetrate this same oppression upon themselves. But it's the truth. The most ardent supporters of the oppression of women in Islam are women. And I've received thousands of letters verifying that. And you see it in their faces. And so, would it make a difference? Absolutely not. Now, this article concludes with the sanctioned duties of the mutawa, which is the officially the unofficial name of the religious police. They are officially the Commission for the Promotion of Virtue and the Prevention of Vice. They include preventing women, this is now what would be under the auspices of promoting virtue and preventing vice. Their primary job is to prevent women from driving, from leaving their homes unescorted by a male relative, for enforcing the strict dress codes. Women have to be intense. They can only show portions of their face and hopefully only, typically only their eyes. Everything else must be under a tent, typically black. Policing bans on public entertainment and making sure all businesses close for prayers five times a day. Boy, a lot of freedom there, huh? You want religious freedom? Go to Saudi Arabia. Go to any Islamic country. You know, it's amazing that Muslims in America who wish to perpetrate terrorist acts all claim that their constitutional rights are being infringed when they're prosecuted because their religion orders them to be murderous. And yet, in their countries, there are no religious freedoms. It's one of the weaknesses in the U.S. Constitution that makes America extraordinarily vulnerable. This free expression of religion did not consider the reality that the religion of Islam is a terrorist manifesto. It's a declaration of war against all humankind. Turning our attention to Libya, we find that the Libyan Mujahideen, the jihadists that America armed and equipped, have now been killing their own. Scores have died and dozens have been wounded in fighting around the Bani Walid, which was a former stronghold of slain leader Muammar Gaddafi. The militias are now shelling from this hilltop town from three sides. Now, the uprising in this town occurred after a 50-day kidnap, shooting, and torture of one of the men credited with capturing Gaddafi last year. Oman bin Shaba'am, 22, died from the injuries that he suffered while being tortured last month. It's a lovely society they've got going in Libya. Gee, I wonder what the one and only legal religion is in Libya. Perhaps it's the same one we find in Saudi Arabia and also in Bangladesh, which will be the source of our next story.
Gold.
Welcome back to Shattering This. I am your host, Yada. You can engage in this discussion by calling 877-300-7645. Sticking with the theme, but just changing venues, we find that federal prosecutors in Brooklyn charged a 21-year-old Bangladeshi man with conspiring to blow up the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, saying that he tried to remotely detonate what he believed was a 1,000-pound bomb in a van he parked outside the building in Lower Manhattan. This is part of really a string of very troubling issues for me. First of all, the man, the fact that he was from Bangladesh is only relevant in the sense that 99.9% of Bangladeshis are Muslims. The idea that he was arrested. He was arrested as part of a sting. It was the FBI that encouraged him all along the way, that provided him with the means to carry out his terrorist plot, and then when he attempted to do what they had aided and abetted him doing, they arrested him for doing what they had encouraged him to do. I think that's just really rotten. It makes the FBI almost co-conspirators in all of this. You know, in the news for SRN this morning, it was talked about the fact that he came here with the express purpose of committing a terrorist act, and he was allowed in on a student visa. The real question is, why did we allow a young man, Muslim man from Bangladesh here on a student visa? I mean, that's like saying during World War II, we ought to have offered student visas to the Hitler Youth. We ought to have issued student visas to kamikazes. Why not? Well, this is really a consequence of what we talked about so much in our program yesterday. When you do as Mitt Romney did and you focus on terrorism as if a terrorist attack meant something, and then you make that your issue and you talk about a war against terrorism, then you leave yourself vulnerable to doing stupid things. Like this, inviting a young Muslim man to into the country on a student visa. This is not a war against terrorism. Terrorism is a tactic. 99.9% of those using this tactic today are young Muslim men. Islam is the foe. And until we are able as a nation to say that we're at war with Islam because Islam is at war with the world, then we will continue to do things that are stupid, as we did when we invited this young Muslim man into this country for the express purpose of him committing a terrorist act. The entire plot played out under the surveillance of the Federal Bureau of Investigation, we read in the article, and the New York Police Department as part of an elaborate sting operation, according to court papers. It's 99% of the, it's a little extreme. Let's say it's between 80 and 90% of our arrests now are sting operations, and about 10% of the arrests are because the plot failed. You know, when the last guy that pulled tried to blow up a car in Manhattan, the bomb didn't go off. And the underwear bomber, you know, he tried to light his britches on fire and blow up the airplane, and all he did is burnt his private parts. The reality is that most of the arrests, however, are just really to play out in the news, to create the illusion that our government is fighting to protect Americans. And so if they inspire a person like this and aid and abet their plot and then arrest them for trying to do as they've been encouraged to do, then it makes all of the news services and everybody says, isn't it wonderful what our government is doing to keep us safe? It's propaganda. Well, the man, Qazi Muhammad Rawadul Ashan Nafis. So do you think that Muhammad was a follower of Muhammad? Who arrived in the United States in January on a student visa, tried to make contacts to form a terrorist cell to help him carry out an attack, according to a criminal complaint in the case. But one of his recruits was an FBI informer who later introduced him to an undercover FBI agent who helped him with his plot. In addition, the complaint said that Muhammad Nafis spoke of a desire to attack and kill a high-ranking government official. A senior law enforcement official said Wednesday night that the official was President Barack Obama, but Mr. Nafisi's desire never got past the talking stage. We're going to return to this story, which I find quite troubling, after the break. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths. Good morning and welcome back to Shattering Myths. I am your host, Yada. We're talking about Muhammad Nafis and the fact that he was charged with conspiring to use weapons of mass destruction. All of his weapons of mass destruction, a singular weapon, by the way, was a remotely controlled bomb, was supplied by the FBI, and of providing material support to al-Qaeda. He had no association of any kind with al-Qaeda. He could face up to life in prison if convicted. The case appears to be the latest to fit a model, this report says, in the process of flushing out people they believe present a risk of terrorism. Federal law enforcement officials have played the role of enabler. That's entrapment, folks. That's illegal. But nonetheless, we do it anyway. Agents and informers that provide suspects with encouragement, with guidance, with money, and even the suspects of the sting operations are led to believe the materials needed to carry out the attack. You hear that? The FBI is providing encouragement to the very people they arrest. They're providing guidance. They're providing money. They're even providing the weapons. Though these operations have almost always held up in court, which is stunning. That means that the judges aren't enforcing the U.S. law. That means they're in cahoots with the FBI, they're in cahoots with politicians, all to create this illusion that they are keeping you safe. They would have been unable to execute such plots without substantial assistance from the government. The government is creating the sting operations, supplying the encouragement, the guidance, the money, and the weapons, and then it's arresting those who went along with their encouragement. It's despicable. Both FBI leaders and federal prosecutors have defended the approach as valuable in finding and stopping people predisposed to commit terrorism. How you're encouraging someone to commit terrorism and then you take credit for stopping them? Good grief. In a prominent case in 2009, several men, urged by an unusually persistent government informer, catch that, a persistent government informer, planted what they believed to be homemade bombs in front of synagogues at the Riverdale section of the Bronx. Four men were convicted, but the judge who oversaw the trial also criticized the law enforcement agents who helped push the plot forward. The government made them terrorists, the judge said. You know, this is the kind of thing that should send shivers up your spine. If the government is framing individuals this way through entrapment, what's going to stop them from framing others? If they're willing to provide the money, the inspiration, the encouragement, the guidance to commit a crime that they hold the individual accountable for, why not take the next step and simply accuse and provide the evidence, manufacture the evidence, to accuse someone whom they don't like, who they think is a threat to the government? Like the host of this show. It is something that should cause everyone to be concerned. That is, it's how domestic terrorism works. It's very much how the Gestapo worked in Nazi Germany. This is a terrible breach of constitutional rights. On Wednesday morning, they drove to a warehouse and assembled the fake bomb. Now, this is the person who was arrested and the government agents. Collectively, they went together to the warehouse. They assembled the fake bomb, placing explosive material in the trash bins that they had bought together and putting the bins in the van, according to the complaint. They assembled the fake detonator that was to be triggered by a cell phone and then drove it to the Federal Reserve Bank of New York, which is the largest bank structure in the world, at least when it was completed in 1924. Mr. Mohammed Nefes and the undercover agent, the FBI agent, parked the van outside of the bank and walked to a nearby hotel where Mr. Nefes recorded a video statement addressed to the American people, which he planned to publicize after the attack. In the statement, he said, "We will not stop until we attain victory or martyrdom." Who do you think we is? Why do you think that we will never see that video? Because we is Islam. Then he tried again to detonate the bomb, dialing the cell phone repeatedly until the agents who had supported him arrested him. The problem here is that we are unwilling to acknowledge that Islam is the motivation for these uncivil plots to commit terrorism. We're not at war with a tactic. We're at war with Islam because Islam is at war with the world. And we need to recognize that. Because the crime here was lying about this tactic, saying that we're not at war with Islam, we're at war with Al-Qaeda, when Al-Qaeda almost is irrelevant. I mean, I'm not even sure Al-Qaeda exists anymore. And what little there was of Al-Qaeda once upon a time was created by the United States in the first place for the express purpose of wielding it against the Soviets in Afghanistan. We're not at war against a tactic. That's like saying we're at war against guns. We're not at war against Al-Qaeda. Al-Qaeda has been irrelevant for a very long time. We're at war with Islam because Islam is at war with the world and has been since Muhammad created it. Moving to another story. Same story, really. Different venue. This is the story that we were nearly completed reviewing in our program yesterday. It speaks of these fundamentalist Islamic terrorists working in Syria, and how in Syria, the United States, through its agents, Qatar and Saudi Arabia, is providing them with weapons, just like we did in Libya. So American officials worry that should Mr. Assad be ousted from Syria, Syria would erupt afterwards into a new conflict over control of the country, in which the more hardline Islamic groups would be the best armed. Why? Because we armed them. Would they be the best armed? Perhaps, but perhaps not. You see, the most feared, the largest, the best armed Islamic terrorist group in Syria is Hezbollah, Nasrallah's group. Now, they are supportive of Assad, but they haven't gone to battle. They haven't deployed a single weapon in defense of Assad. Why? Because if Assad fails, they will take over the country, because they are the best armed Islamic terrorist group. And all that the weapons that we are providing to the Sunni Muslim terrorists will do is make certain that the carnage increases. Now, this article concludes by saying, it depends on what happens in the arms bazaars that has been feeding these rebel groups. In several towns across the Turkey-Syrian borders, the rebel commanders can be seen buying weapons en masse and then taking those weapons across the border and hiding them rather than using them, so that when the Assad government falls, they will be the best armed militia and therefore can fight for power. Last month, in a Turkish border town, we found that a number of individuals had been seen buying weapons en masse and then burying them in caches, which they said they were hiding them for the express purpose of using them after the collapse of the Assad government. Now, that's the opposite of what we should want, and yet we are aiding and abetting this. Now, listen to this next quote, because this next quote tells you everything you need to know about Saudi Arabia and Qatar, the very countries that are the funnels for American weapons into Syria. Moreover, the rebels have usually and often adapted their language and their appearance in ways they hope will continue to appeal to those distributing the American weapons. For instance, many rebels have grown the long, shaggy beards favored by hard-line Salaf Muslims after hearing that Qatar and Saudi Arabia were more inclined to give the weapons to Islamists. Now, you would have thought, with the United States overtly saying we want to give our weapons to people who share our values, that the less fundamentalist Islamic they looked, the less like the Taliban they looked, the less like Islamic jihadists and terrorists they looked, that the more we would want those individuals to have the weapons. But it's exactly the opposite. The more they speak in religious Arabic, the more their language is guided by the Quran and Hadith. The more they look like fundamentalist Islamic mujahideen as hardline Salaf Muslims, the more likely it is that the Saudi Arabians and Qataris will give them the American weapons. The opposite of what you would have expected. There's a term used here, Salafi. Salafi is a concept that appears time and again in the press. It's used mainly because most people haven't a clue what it means, and they can use it and convey something that is accurate without actually informing the reader. In Islam, a Salaf is an ancestor. And so the Salaf Muslims are Muslims who trust and revere the words and deeds of the first Muslims, the Islam's ancestors, if you will. They're speaking of the sources of the Hadith and the Quran. These Salafs were the cited sources for all of the sayings of Muhammad, including the Quran itself. They are the ones who joined with Muhammad to terrorize everyone within camel ride of Mecca and Medina. It is the Salafs who led 75 terrorist raids in the first 10 years of the Islamic era. The isnads that give credibility to the Hadith, which are all reports from Muhammad's companions, are all by way of the Salaf. A Salaf Muslim is a fundamentalist Muslim. It's a Muslim who knows what Americans need to know, which is the truth about Muhammad and the violent nature of his religion. This is a shattering myth. Our last story today is going to stay in the same general area, that of playing Americans in particular for fools. You've got the world's most foolish religion, and yet it's still able to fool Americans. You see, now that it is known for certain that not only are fundamentalist Islamic jihadists and mujahideen, the very terrorists that were hunting and killing Americans in Afghanistan and in Iraq, the very Muslims that we're providing weapons to in Syria, now that that is proven, and that those trusted partners that are providing the weapons, the American weapons, Qatar and Saudi Arabia, seeking to give them to the most fundamentalist Muslims, what do the Muslims now wish to do? Well, they have decided that they're going to give the illusion of unity. This is the same thing that worked so successfully for them in Libya. In Libya, you had a bunch of tribes that formed militias that were being supported particularly by Qatar, same source, American weapons funneled through Qatar, to these militants. But now, when they created the illusion that they had an umbrella organization under which all of these independent militias were fighting, then nations like the United States began to supply weapons. So in Syria, it's obvious that there is no alliance between the rebel militant groups, and so the United States has used proxies to supply weapons. But they're saying maybe, you know, if we create the illusion that we're all together as one team, we're the good guys against the bad guy, that we'll get American weapons. So this is the illusion. It's being reported by Reuters. Syria's divided rebels have agreed to set up a joint leadership council to oversee their battle to overthrow President Bashar al-Assad, two of the insurgent sources said Tuesday as fighting raged across cities and the country. Two of them said. So you've got two now groups that said, hey, we're going to have a council, and the purpose of that council, well, listen to this. Rebels hope the decision, taken after increasing pressure from foreign supporters on them to unite, will help convince those backers that they are a credible and coordinated fighting force deserving to be supplied with more powerful weapons. Boy, it is amazing as to how easily fooled Americans are in the West, and how eager we are to supply weaponry to fundamentalist Salaf Muslims. The agreement has been reached. They only need to sign it now, one of the rebels groups said. Foreign supporters are telling us, sort yourselves out and unite so that we have a clear and credible side to provide with quality weapons. So they created the illusion just so that they could receive the weapons. And this is very much like the American Sting operation. So what you have here is the West saying, hey, if you pretend to be this, if you create the illusion of that, then we will give you the weapons to wage jihad. Except in this case, the weapons are real. And tens of thousands of people are dying. In fact, there was a report out today that in addition to the 35,000 that have been killed by both sides, and it's fairly even as to the number killed by the Assad regime and those killed by the Mujahideen fighting him, that there are as many as 80,000 who have gone missing. And those that have gone missing are just as likely to have been kidnapped and tortured and killed by the militants that we are supplying weapons as the government that they are opposing. The activists say that more than 30,000 people have been killed and that hundreds of thousands have fled to neighboring countries and that more than a million have been displaced and perhaps as many as 100,000 have simply disappeared. The British Observatory for Human Rights said that 80 people were killed in Syria just yesterday, and the day before that, 160 had been killed. Heavy clashes have broken out throughout the country, now that both sides are armed. Underlying increasing international concern about the conflict, Pope Benedict, Cardinal Ratzinger, is going to send a group of top cardinals to visit Syria in coming days to express his solidarity with its battered population. Now, when we return, just a moment, we'll talk about why it is that Pope Benedict's cardinals will be allowed to fly into Syria. I am Yada. This is Shattering Myths.
A little over a year ago, I began to do a lot of research into why, even though I had a pretty good-sized meal, that I was still starving. And my research led me to a well-known fact that...